Tank is funded by listeners like you.
Today on Geek Tank, we have an interview with Jacqueline Carey.
She gives us a surprising new view on writer's block.
And Chelsea lights all the things on fire.
I'm Guy.
Hi, I'm Troy.
Hi, I'm Chelsea.
And this is Geek Tank,
your multi-series book podcast.
We'll fill your platels. Yeah, I'm
today we're going to talk about Jacqueline Carey. Jacqueline Carey, which we interviewed at Malcon.
Your brain just got...
Yeah, I did.
So it was actually a combination interview. It was yourself and Mariah Summers.
Yeah.
Summers. No, only
summer.
Singular.
Just
singular.
One summer. There's no more summers after that.
Okay.
But first, the news. And the numbers are in. On September 24th, Context is for Kings, the episode of Discovery. Live plus three, which is live plus 3 days worth of DVR viewing, drew in a 10.6 rating. And Live was a 9.49 rating, which placed Discovery at number 7 for the week. Orville, If the Stars Should Appear, came in at Live Plus 3 at 6.26, and a Live at 4.05, which placed it at number 15, which is still behind Discovery, but hey, that's still cool. Thursday's episode of Orville will be Krill, and Sunday's episode of Discovery will be Choose Your Pain.
So, case C, Night of the Living Dead, the original on video isn't enough for you. There's a live stage play version of it going on starting today, Monday, October 9th, Friday. And it goes Friday and Saturday, 8 o'clock every night from now through Halloween. And that is at the Bug Theater, which is at 3654 Navajo Street, Denver, Colorado, 80211. And that is $15 in advance, or $18 at the door, or you can go back to $15 at the door if you dress as a zombie. I also like to point out that I have heard they're spraying blood, kind of like a Gallagher show, but instead of watermelons, it's blood. So maybe don't wear your best clothing.
Wear a poncho, blood poncho.
And it's directed by Chris Hipps.
So we have an update on the Alex Maurer case. She filed a late response, so we're still waiting to hear what the outcome is going to be on that. In horror news, if you're still missing Silent Hill PT, if you're still racked and ravaged and upset, Alice in Road, which is a horror game that was considered kind of an homage to it that took off last year, is back on track. The programmer is starting to work on that again. It was canceled in June of last year, and then I guess in August he stated that he was going to be producing himself instead of working with Team 17 as the publisher. So we're waiting to see if there's going to be a Kickstarter, if we're going to get a release date soon. We'll see, but I'm really excited to see when that will be out.
And that's the news. So we were at Malcon, and...
which, for those of you who don't know, is Myths and Legends Convention, and it's definitely up there in my top three favorite conventions because it encompasses what I love about conventions. It's small, it's personal, and you don't feel overwhelmed about with it.
Yeah, I mean, I really love the big conventions. I do. But there is really definitely something to be said about these little teeny cons because they're very nice and
They're very compact and well-controlled. I haven't been to Malcon yet. It's on my list.
You're gonna be.
I've never made it.
Well, now that you're part of Geek Tank, it's gonna happen.
We're gonna drag you around.
I'll make it.
We'll drag you around because we need donuts.
Well, we get really good interviews at these smaller conventions, too.
Yeah.
And one of them being Jacqueline Carey, who is an author.
Who's actually an author that I'm very familiar with and I'm a fan of. And
but so, it didn't always start that way.
No, it didn't start that way. So I had gotten her book. I had a really, there's a story. There's a story.
Hey, Guy, tell us about the first book you ever read by Jacqueline Carey.
It's time for story time.
It's story time by Guy. So I had a long flight, and I was going to go to Texas to see my dad, and there was a layover in Phoenix, and it was like a stupid 3-hour layover or something. And I had gone to I'd gone to Barnes & Noble beforehand and said, I'm going to get a book. This is back in the days before Kindle. And so
Barnes & Noble was still a thing.
When Barnes & Noble was still a thing. Well, Barnes & Noble is still a thing, but Kindles and Nooks are now a thing. Mm-hmm. And you can have your books on your phone. And so I'd gone to Barnes & Noble to get this book, and I was just looking around, and I was like, oh, this looks interesting. And so I'd gotten Kushiel's Dart, which was, it seemed interesting, but I wasn't. It didn't look to me like a high fantasy book, which is because I'm not really a big fan of high fantasy. I had been kind of turned off a little bit by previous high fantasy books that will remain nameless until later when we will discuss them at some other point. Anyway, so I picked it up and I had it on the plane with me and I am reading it and we start with this history of all this stuff, and I'm like, oh no, this is all the stuff I hate in high fantasy. It's like, who knows who, and who had whose children, and whose pizza was made by who. And
you just signed up for the semester 101 of high fantasy.
And I'm like, oh no, this is like exactly what I hate in high fantasy. And I was really worried. But I was stuck on this plane, and there was nothing I could do. And it was just me. I didn't have anybody with me. I was just flying by myself to Houston, and we were stuck in Phoenix, and I wasn't going anywhere. And it was 172,000 degrees outside, and they had us stuck on the plane, and so we weren't going anywhere. I couldn't go into the airport. I couldn't go any. So I just kept reading, and I was like, well, I got nothing better to do. And it was just that first chapter. And then all of a sudden, it got really, really good. And it hooked me in. And it was fast. And I was just like, wow. I mean, right off the bat. So it was like chapter one, I was so worried. I was like, oh, what have I gotten myself into? And I would have put that book down based on that first chapter. And I would have totally regretted it.
Can't judge a book by its first chapter.
Right, you can't. But I mean, it was really a great example of, you know, I'm so turned off by all of those large stories and, you know, these huge structures. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, no. And so, but I was stuck. Yeah, so ultimately, but then chapter two hit and I was like, oh, I'm in.
So it's Krishner's Dart, is that the first in the
series? That's the very first one of the Kushiel saga.
So if you're going to start the Kushiel saga, that's the one you want to start with. And if you can, if that bothers you the way it bothers Guy, just know to get past that first chapter.
Right, oh, yeah.
That's all you got to do. Yeah.
Or if you really love that stuff, just keep rereading the first chapter multiple times.
Over and over.
Until you have it memorized.
And actually, as the story goes on, it does make sense. It totally makes sense. And when you listen to the interview with Jacqueline Carey, you can understand that she did some serious work on her entire character build and everything like that. So all of this is really important.
Well, and this particular series is an alternate history, correct, of Rome? And so she really has to set that up for you.
Yeah.
You really need to know the history before. It's not just a pointless, like, I'm going to drone on and on about all the things that I created because I did it. Ha, ha, ha.
Right. It's extremely important because you're about to be introduced into an alternate version of France and an alternate version of Italy and an alternate version of... And so you need to be prepped that we're about to enter into a different world. And if you're not prepped, you're dropped into this world where you're like, what?
So you got to properly build the world
in order to set it up. She had to prep you. Yeah. And it makes sense. But I was so worried that we were about to go on for about an entire book of explaining the moss on the side of a castle. And I was like, really? Really? Yeah. Is that what I just signed up for?
No. Well, I'm sure all the Jacqueline Carey fans are like, would you guys please shut up and just get to the interview? So we probably should
At least go into the interview.
All right, so, here we go.
Okay, so I was hoping to ask you some questions about writing in general before we get into your specific series. So did you always think of yourself as a writer? Was that your goal from when you were young?
Okay, so this is not a story that's terribly popular with teachers, but I started writing in high school because I was really bored in class. And I had changed schools. There was some overlap in the curriculum. But basically, I started a novel in the back of my notebook, and it looked like I was taking notes. It was great.
Right.
And it was sort of part fantasy, part soap opera, altogether horrible. And I kept at it for years, even all through college. It was like this secret hobby of mine. It ran on for generations. And it wasn't until I graduated from college with a degree in English literature and psychology, and I thought, I don't know if I actually want to pursue either of those. So I took a half a year off and took part in this work exchange program. I had a work permit for the UK, and I got a job in a bookstore in London. And it was at that time that I kind of looked around and went, people make a living writing books, which was kind of naive at the time. But that's when I realized that this secret hobby was actually a real vocation and a passion.
So the world building for Kushiel's Dart is amazing. The world is so detailed. How much time did you spend thinking about that and planning that before you actually started writing the book, or did you kind of do it at the same time?
No, I'm going to say that probably had approximately the gestation period of a human baby. You know, I think a good 9 months of thinking and researching, and not just world building, but tone. Like, I knew I wanted some sort of courtly intrigue, but swashbuckling tone. So I was rereading a lot of Dumas.
Oh, you just struck her. Struck a chord with her. Yeah. She's a big fan of Dumas.
Yes. I've read all the Three Musketeers books. So I lost my place for a second. Actually, that led into another question I wanted to write, because I've also read your Agents of Hell books, and they have such a different feel to them. They're, you know, very fast-paced, they're more adventurous, and the Kushiel's books are just sumptuous. And,
yeah.
And what is it like writing in such different voices, and how do you set yourself up for those different writing experiences?
Well, I mean, I'm an eclectic writer in part because I'm an eclectic reader. And the analogy that I used is, you know, with the Kushiel books, sometimes you want to splurge on that 8-course tasting menu and, you know, just sit down to this sumptuous, exactly, opulent meal. And sometimes you want a bowl of popcorn. And I feel like that as a writer. And with the Agent of Hell books, one of the things that was super fun for me, I got to use pop culture references. And there are just dozens and dozens of them in there.
Yeah, it's got to be different being able to pull on the real world. I mean, not the real world per se, but the current world that we live in.
Right.
As opposed to the Kushiel's books are very historical. Right. And then was that inspired by living in Europe? Because you said you lived in London for a while. The Kushiel books, sorry.
A trip to the south of France was really the catalyst for the setting of those in an alternate version of Provence, essentially. And so I just really fell in love with the atmosphere, the quality of the light, the scent of lavender in the air. Mm-hmm. So that was Genesis part one.
And what I love is you can actually pick up all those things while reading the book. Mm-hmm. They are very sensual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of writers neglect writing to the five senses, and scent's a big one for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just noticing your scent of lavender. That's an interesting, that's a really colorful way of, well, I guess scentful way of putting it. So that's kind of an interesting interview we were going on there.
Yeah, I can totally tell that you and Mariah are both fans.
Yeah.
And it's showing through with the questions.
Yeah, I was nervous.
It's okay. Like, you're meeting one of your favorite authors. It's totally fine to be absolutely freaked out.
What's so weird is I get more nervous about meeting authors than I do about meeting, like, movie stars and TV stars and actors. I was completely and totally beside myself meeting Werner Venge. Mm-hmm. Who's one of my favorite authors ever. I was just like stumbling over my own words and being a complete idiot. And
well, that's
was
like
really
normal.
Sad.
That's every day.
Yeah. Like, but I can be not idiot whenever, you know, I'm meeting actors.
It's difficult to meet your heroes, I think, period. I kind of freak out over anybody I know.
Yeah.
That's like super famous. Like one of our friends is Michael Shalhoub, and he's the brother of Tony Shalhoub, who was in Monk. And I still freak out when I meet Tony, and I've met him like five times. Like, this should be normal by now. It's not normal.
You should just get him to just record, and it exploded. No, except he didn't do that. But it's still funny.
It is.
I liked
so
him.
Very funny.
I loved him in Galaxy Quest, even though he didn't say that line. But I loved him in Galaxy Quest. Okay.
What I have to say about Jacqueline Carey is it's super, super cool because I kind of had the same experience where I was bored in high school and college and I was writing things in the back of my notebook, just kind of exploring fiction. But what she did was build a whole world and she set herself up for success, which is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, creating the whole world. I mean, it's notebooks full of whole worlds is just kind of an amazing thing to me.
I couldn't imagine it. Like, I can't stand that. It's so tedious.
I'm just mad at myself because I wasted all that boredom and did nothing with it. I just sat there and was bored.
I'm mad at myself because I threw away all those notebooks full of worlds.
Oh, no.
And so it's like, I have worlds. They were all there.
See, I had friends who would sketch during class, and then as like presents at the end of the school year, they'd give everybody their sketches of them that they used to do art, or they'd give the little babbles out, which I thought was really sweet in my little like nerd group.
Oh, I never think about those things.
Yeah.
I never think about those things. I always think it's weird. I don't know why. I always think giving my artwork out is weird.
It's
so strange.
It's not weird. It's promoting yourself.
Oh, I know. Okay, well, on that note, let's go to a break. We'll be back after this.
Hi, I'm Amy Reeder, creator of Rocket Girl and Moon Girl. You can find me at Amy Reeder on Twitter. And you're listening to Geek Tank.
All right, time for an Ask Us Anything. So this is where you get to ask us anything and we answer it. So if you want to ask us anything, you can write to us at
questions@RockyMountainGeekTank.com.
So please ask us anything. So our question today is, what book was hardest for you to finish for whatever reason? And for me, this was in high school. I had to read Fahrenheit 451. It was Ray Bradbury, I believe.
Yeah.
Bradbury.
It became a game of me counting how many times I fell asleep while reading it. And I got to 14 times that it knocked me out before I could finish it in the matter of like a couple of weeks.
Wow.
That I had to read it. And I had to write a book report. I don't know if it's because I was being forced to read it that caused me to do that, or if it's because of my age at the time I was reading it. Maybe I wasn't mature enough to quite grasp it or for it to hook me. But the part that really I hated in the book was the main character gets hit by a car, and it describes it as him getting hit at like 90 miles per hour and it breaks his arm. And I'm thinking, no, he's dead. That's the end of the story. Dead. Done. So it's
the end.
And he was hit by a car 90 miles per hour. The end. But it's not. He ends up like floating down a river to the tree of life that's all symbolic of blah, 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 blah. And then I fall asleep again. I'm sure lots of people love it. It's a really great premise. I liked Fahrenheit 451 when they redid it and called it Equilibrium. With lots of gunfu and
right.
Shooting.
It was really difficult to get through, though. I was very upset by it because they're burning books. Like, you have to fit the system or get out. And it was a commentary a little bit on communism, but I didn't know what the hell that was.
I almost burned it. It was so hard to read. It would have been a fitting end to it.
That would have been awesome. Actually, that would have been really awesome.
So,
Fahrenheit 451.
It was really hard for me to get through, and it's...
Yeah.
It's probably sticks out in my memory most because it was the first book that really like knocked me on my butt because it was just boring as hell to me.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So I think for you, both of you, it's kind of the same answer.
Kind of the same answer.
But I actually just thought of one that was harder for me to get through.
Well, then let's throw it to you, Chelsea.
I'll expand upon that. So originally I was going to say the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and we can talk more on that with Guy. But I just had a thought about books that I've thrown across the room. That's pretty rare for me. So I was a huge Harry Potter fan. It came out when I was a kid, so I was obsessed with it. It was my life for a long time. The seventh book of Harry Potter, I think, is the absolute worst in the series.
Wow. Deathly Hallows is deathly boring.
Boring. No, it's not. I don't think she set up the series well enough. Like, she didn't know what to do with the end of the series.
Right.
At that point. So the first character, spoiler alert, murdered is Hedwig.
right.
for no freaking reason.
And just to shock you.
Yeah, it's literally just a shock factor. And it's like five pages in. And I threw it across the room and I was like, bye. I'm done. This is it. And I picked it back up until the next character died and I threw it across the room. And I picked it up until the next character died. I was upset because people were getting killed off for no reason other than people need to die. And I was really
I've been
hoping,
listening to George R.R. Martin and I figured now it's time to kill all these people.
Right. I thought that she was going to go for a nice twist and I was kind of hoping for it because there's hints that Neville Longbottom is the true hero.
Right.
So I was hoping Neville and Harry were going to team up to kill Voldemort finally, extinguish him or stop him, render him powerless, which would have been really nice. Like, no magic powers, you're a muggle now. But they didn't.
They didn't.
It was really boring. And it was just tragic to be tragic. And I have a huge problem with that. There needs to be solid
reason for tragic.
And then after the book came out, J.K. Rowling and Emma Watson, who gets together with Ron... Hermione gets together with Ron at the end of the book. She said that, they would have a horrible marriage and they'd never get along and they'd end up breaking up and dying in a corner. And that's ridiculous. Like, you put your characters together.
I'm done with that.
You built this world. You made these characters. You put them together. And now you're just rending them apart.
Just because
you've decided that, their marriage would end up horrible and loveless and they'd divorce bitterly
right.
and split the children and fight over them into eternity.
Just because. That seems like a thing
That's
to do.
That's super not okay with me.
Okay. Well, there you go. I think really for me, it was Lord of the Rings. And it really was. It was. I knew that as a good, solid geek, I had to read Lord of the Rings. And I tried to read it at 13, and I tried to read it at 14, and I tried to read it at 16, and I tried to read it at 18, and then I tried to read it again when I was like 22, and my girlfriend was like, what? You haven't read Lord of the Rings? You need to read Lord of the Rings. And she bought me a copy of Lord of the Rings, and I had to try to read it, and I couldn't read it. It wasn't until I was like 30 before I finally read all of Lord of the Rings. And it was only because the movies were being made. Mm-hmm. And I knew the movies were coming out, and I didn't want to actually see the movies without having read the books. But it was horrible. I was having the worst time.
It's a slog.
But it had wrecked. I mean, I couldn't stand it. It felt like every time I read that book, mm-hmm. all I was doing was reading paragraph after paragraph about the moss on the side of buildings. And it was horrible. And I was like, just move on. Yeah. I get that the hobbit holes are full of hobbit holiness, and I get that, and that's cool, and that's fine, but oh my God. And of course, the truth is, at 13, 14, and 15, you can probably write me off as being a little too young and too immature, and not understanding that these books were written in 1930 or 1940 or whenever they were written, and yeah, okay, so it was a different world back then, mm-hmm. and he was establishing the trope.
Right.
So, I mean, you kind of have to give him leeway for nobody knew what an elf was. Nobody knew what a dwarf was. Nobody knew what a hobbit was. So he had to establish all of that. And I guess you can kind of grant that.
My wife and my son, older son, have been reading it. And she is telling me about how there's so many endings because they're already past the point where the ring's gone. They've gotten rid of it. But now they have to wrap up every character's ending.
Right.
So it's just like still half a book to go through, even though it should just be done with.
Well, and I'm now reading it to my son, and he's loving it, and it's great, and I'm enjoying it too, but I'm also doing all the voices, and I'm having a lot of fun with it, mm-hmm. and it's a different experience now. I had the worst time with Lord of the Rings.
You can say that Tom Bombadil and Treebeard
oh my
are
God.
The two worst characters ever.
Yes.
They're so long-winded. And boring.
Yeah. Well, it's good. It's good, going to sleep material.
It's all the history.
It's all the history.
But the problem is if you read the Silmarillion, which nobody has, you would know.
He should have put those two characters in the Silmarillion and left it alone.
Did either of you see Silver Lining Notebook? Or is that what it was called?
No, I haven't.
There's a scene that totally reminded me of our friend Alex. He's reading a Hemingway book. And he gets to the end, and the ending just irritates him so much, he curses at the book and then throws it through a window. Like, shatters the window and throws it out. He's just so angry at the book. He's like, I can't believe the book ended this way. It sucks. And throws it out. And it reminded me of how Alex absolutely hated
the Dark Tower.
The way the Dark Tower series ended.
But, well, that was our Ask Us Anything. Yes. We don't want to waste too much time because we got to get back to part two. Here we'll get back after this.
And we're back. We are here at our Starbucks just south of First and Wadsworth. And we are talking about Guy's favorite author, one of his favorite authors, Jacqueline Carey.
Yeah, Jacqueline Carey.
Soon to be maybe your favorite author.
Yes, you should read her. So
let's jump right back in the interview.
Let's just jump right back in to this interview because we've got some interesting stuff to listen to.
Is there any chance you will ever return to writing in that world?
I don't know. It depends on the muse. I've said that world has been really deeply mined for story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I find myself thinking things like, amnesia. No, I used that trope. I doubled down on it. So, I don't know. I get asked a lot.
Yeah. I figured you probably got asked a lot, but I was going to ask anyway.
It's okay.
Sorry. So I was looking at your website, and I saw that you have a new book coming out soon, The Starless.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that you didn't really want to give away a whole lot, but is there any kind of teaser that you'd like to give us about that?
Sure. It isn't coming out until next summer, mostly just because of Tor's publishing schedule. That's the slot that was available. This is a standalone fantasy set in a wholly created world, mm-hmm. and the sort of cosmology behind it is the stars, what we knew as the stars, were the bright eyes and flashing teeth of the children of heaven who challenged their father, the sun, and in rebellion and were cast down, where they all took forms in different islands and lands in this vast archipelago that are strange and weird. I feel like there's a dash of pulp horror in there. But then it's also very much a quest novel, or becomes that.
I love standalone books because when you're trying to introduce a friend or someone to a new author, it's really nice to be able to offer them a standalone book to read.
Yep.
And then say, and then here's the 9-book series that I love.
Right. Yeah, when people ask me for book recommendations, it's tough because if you're a fan of the Kushiel's Legacy series, you know, I've got sort of at one end of the spectrum, there are also fans of an author like Anne Bishop, and mm-hmm. at the other end of the spectrum, it's more like a Steven Erickson.
Mm-hmm.
So Guy Gavriel Kay is an author that I always feel pretty comfortable recommending for his use of alternate history and drawing on mythology, and Tagana is a standalone.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's nice to be able to say, try that, and if you don't like it.
Yeah, well, there you go. I have read those. I like them too.
I have a quick question. You were talking about when the books are released. So you are sort of ahead of the game. You're already written, the book's already written, it's already set up and everything. Is that normal for you, or are you... We've interviewed a number of authors who are... I'm still writing the last few pages, and it's coming out next week, sort of thing. Which kind of author are you? Do you seem like you're always ahead of the game, or are you sort of catching up all the time?
My entire career has been with the traditional, now Big Five publishers, and I've generally had contracts that dictated a deadline well ahead of the publication date.
Do you feel like you were comfortable with that, or...? You feel like you were just always scraping in, or?
It's been both. I had to ask for an extension on the Sundering duology. Others I've delivered ahead of time. It depends on the creative process and
your muse.
Yeah,
whether your
how
muse
fast
is with
it goes.
You
but I've never been like horribly over deadline.
So when you I've noticed a theme throughout your books. There's a strong exploration of religion.
Mm-hmm.
And in specific, Eliwa's companions, are those angels out of Hebrew myth? Did you come up with those based on the Hebrew religion? Or?
Yeah, they're all somewhere in the pantheon. I have a book called... Dictionary of Angels, including the fallen ones. And the idea is kind of inspired by the Book of Enoch.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it all comes from there?
Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah, not necessarily the individual companions. Some of them do, like I'm sure, quite sure, Azazel and Shemhazai, but there's just not that much talk about female angels.
Yeah.
So
you have to kind of come up.
I had to cherry pick a little
bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Creative choices.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the thing, writing alternate history, you're not scrupulously bound to your source material. You're held to a standard of plausibility, not accountability.
Right, right.
And one of the things I love about alternate history is exploring what one small change, what effect one small change can have.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy that in the Kushiel books and the other alternate history I've had as well. And how did you kind of think through that process? Did you start with Elua and his companions? Did you start with the present and then work backwards?
It's sort of organic. I'm not sure if I can even answer that, but the world building and mythology definitely was there from the beginning. And the funny thing is, I got hired to write a copy for a coffee table book on angels that basically I got paid to do the research that went into the religious world building.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Wish that could work out every time.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
On the sort of flip side to that, I drew on an awful lot of travel research that I would have written off had I but known.
Right. Do you have characters that just, you just love the way that they kind of traipse around in your brain, but they're not necessarily, that's not the way it necessarily comes across in the paper, but you like who they, you know, you just like the feel of them.
Not hugely, some more than others. I mean, every now and then, like in the Agent of Hell books, Lorene, the Lamia, is particularly fun to write. But no, I think my process just doesn't work quite that way.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
But I'm into the specific things that were fun to write. Probably one of the biggest fun challenges over the course of the Kushiel's Legacy series is in the second book, Kushiel's Chosen, sort of where in the world is Melisande Shahrazai?
Yes.
And that's almost constructed like a classic mystery in that there is a huge amount of misdirection to keep the characters as well as the reader from making what's sort of the dramatically logical connection.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that reveal happens, mm-hmm. it's really satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And that's all I'll say about it.
Yeah, I know. Trying to do it with no spoilers. But
yeah, that was a good, solid story.
I can see what you're saying there.
Another one I will say. In Kushiel's Mercy, the double down on amnesia thing, when Imrail believes himself to be another character and switching voices abruptly mid-narrative stream and then slowly letting it return. That was fun. That was some narrative gymnastics.
That does sound fun. Do you have any projects you're working on right now?
I am actually between projects right now, which is kind of delightful. And at that, that's not entirely true because I just the day before, turned in the copy edit for The Starless, which is mm-hmm. the upcoming project.
Right.
But with that'll be my 18th novel, and I am finding I need a little more downtime to let the wells refill. Mm-hmm. I need to do more reading for pleasure and looking for stuff that blows my socks off and inspires me.
I actually have that written on my list here, which is, what do you read for fun?
I am totally an eclectic reader, so almost any genre. I read a lot of literary fiction. I try to keep up with fantasy, of course, one of my loves, science fiction. On airplanes, I like a good suspense thriller. I don't know why. I just started rereading The Handmaid's Tale after having watched the series.
That
makes sense.
It's a good
one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good song.
And then, do you have any more questions, Guy?
No.
Okay.
Did you ask the one?
I didn't. So my friend Anna really also enjoys the Kushiel books, and she had some questions about where do you picture, like, what time period in real world time do you picture those books being set in?
I would say like mid-1400s, but because some societies I've sort of culturally repressed and mm-hmm. some I've accelerated, you know, the Dangelines obviously have a little more of a Renaissance sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, roughly mid-1400s.
Yeah. Okay, I think that kind of addresses what she was asking. She was saying some of the cultures remind me more of the medieval period, some
right.
of them remind me more of the right. Renaissance period.
Yeah, a clever reader dubbed my style of alternate history cafeteria style.
Yeah.
And I think that's totally fair because I kind
of
went through it. Yep. That looks good today and that. So it's like, Carthage, I'm going to resurrect you. And I'm sorry, Scandinavia, you're getting held
you're just
back
toast.
A little.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, what's your favorite scene?
Yeah.
Because that's true, because we all have like a favorite, that moment
mm-hmm.
when the book was just like, oh, that's awesome. So what is
yeah.
your favorite? Because that's a good point. What is your favorite
Well, it's
point?
It tends to be things that are unexpected.
Yeah.
And in the Kushiel's Legacy series, what's the middle one? Justice. We've had this long slog through mm-hmm. this terrible Vralian winter with Imriel pursuing vengeance or justice. And when that moment finally comes, and again, I'm trying to do this without spoilers, but it's been building up and building up to something climactic, and it turns out instead to be something really quiet and poignant.
Yeah.
You know, those things that when it takes an unexpected, well, I mean, I knew it was, I planned it, but
right.
narratively,
but
yeah.
But you're, I feel like as a writer, you're a crafter.
Mm-hmm.
You craft. I mean, you know, there are a lot of people who just head forth.
Yeah.
And you're very much a crafter. You're very, and it comes through very, very much in your writing.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons why I enjoy your work.
Yeah, thank
you. It's crafted. You're like a blacksmith. You're
yeah.
really working the story very, very well. So I can see that because the final piece comes in together in those congealed moments
mm-hmm.
where it all just snaps into
yeah.
place. So I can see that. Yeah. That's
mm-hmm.
that's my favorite
yeah.
parts of your
oh,
book,
cool.
Sue. So.
Yeah.
And that was awesome. I'm glad you guys got to talk to Jacqueline about so many different things. She's got a lot going on for her in these books.
The thing that she said that I really thought was fascinating was plausibility over accountability.
Yeah.
So how do you interpret that? Because I have an interpretation.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Go ahead and you tell me, because I'm like, if you got an interpretation, because I could go like a number of different ways. But.
Right. It's as a creator, when you create something, if you make what you create, no matter how fake or sci-fi or fantasy it is, as long as it's slightly plausible, you can get away without your audience trying to hold you accountable for whether it's plausible or not.
Yeah.
So it's I think it's one of those things like with Star Trek. Star Trek gets away with a lot of stuff that they fake the techno babble
mm-hmm.
because it sounds plausible. And only, like, the strictest of techno nerds would try to hold them accountable to it.
I think that I always kind of, as a creator myself, I always hold to Shakespeare's line, to thine own self be true.
Yeah.
As long as you believe your world strong enough, they'll believe their world strong enough. Because you can hold to your own rules. I mean, I can make a world where it's all purple unicorns, and as long as it's all purple unicorns and I never deviate from purple unicorns, we're okay.
Mm-hmm.
But if I start having orange unicorns in the middle of the purple unicorns and I don't explain it for any reason whatsoever, then people start questioning why there's orange unicorns in the purple unicorn world, and you get a crack and a shear across it. You're willing
yeah.
to believe that a spaceship can fly through space and disassemble somebody into their component molecules and reassemble them on a planet for no reason whatsoever. You know, you're willing to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason behind it is because we don't have the money to build a shuttlecraft. I mean, that's the reason.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
It's so...
Well, and this is a big concept in theater. You have to create the reality for the audience, and it has to be, you have to be able to draw them in, because they're coming in with little to no expectations.
Right.
And you have to create that world and make it realistic. So if something seems too outside the box, you need to be able to recognize that. And I think that's a really difficult thing to do. You have to be very delicate with this kind of work, because you have to make it believable, and you have to make this your reality. This is a reality. I'm going to draw you into it. And you have to be very careful with the rules and regulations that you're not breaking out of that.
It's kind of like having a TV celebrity host becoming president. That's not plausible at all. And so you'd hold that to its accountability if somebody tried to create that fiction.
That is an interesting statement. But I think in this case, with her, she has a very rich universe that she has put in herself very strict rules for her to follow. So her purple unicorns are absolutely straight. So she knows exactly where all of her places are. And therefore, as Shakespeare says, to thine own self be true. She's true to her world. Mm-hmm. And she could tell the most outlandish, wild story. And you'll believe it because it's true to her universe. And I think that that's the way I kind of read what she's saying. And it's true, because I'm not saying that her story is outlandish, but I mean, she's got an alternate universe, an alternate history. She's got a complete different history of how France and Italy formed, and all of Europe, everything. It's got gods that don't exist. It's got creatures that don't exist. It's an entire different culture. And we're willing to believe it. We're willing to buy into it. And it's so palpable. It's so real. Because she's true to it.
Right, and she walks a very fine line, since it is an alternate history. Since she is giving her own, there has to be reasons for that alternate timeline, for these splits.
Right.
For these reasons why France is different, why Italy is different, why these different gods emerged. So she has to tread a very delicate line, because there are going to be some huge history nerds out there going, well, I don't see your reasoning for this, and that breaks.
Right.
And we have to tread a very delicate line with going to a break right now. So we'll be right back after this.
This is Super Dave Rains from Big Show Entertainment Network. And if you like Geek Tank, check out my podcast, Super Dave Rains and the Big Show, on YouTube. So we'll catch you later. And always remember to own the love.
And we're back with the worst thing to ever happen to a creator ever: hitting a brick wall or writer's block.
Yeah.
Here's Jacqueline Carey's view.
Gotcha.
Do you ever have writer's block? And then how do you address that if you do?
Is this wood?
Yeah.
I need something to knock on. I have not had a serious case of writer's block. I mean, of course, there are always little issues that arise where you're like, oh, that is a problem to be solved. Usually, if I leave it alone, it works itself out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good.
I do know the late Sarah Douglas, who I had the pleasure of touring with in my first book tour, along with Juliet Marillier, who's also delightful. Sarah swore by baths. Just absolutely. Writer's block, get in the bath. It'll be gone.
That's interesting.
We're parents, and we swore by baths for cranky children as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. There may be a big similarity between.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you have a crab
writers
and an author, put them in the bath. Okay. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Come on.
That sounds about right to me.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
Hang on a second. I had to do that.
Yeah.
It's like a lawnmower or a chainsaw. It's I maybe have a tiny bit of writer's block, but once I kickstart the free writing or the free stream of thinking, it just flows. I hear of this writer's block stuff, but I don't know what it is.
It kills me. I light things on fire. I tear up pieces of paper. I go back and edit and usually end up like deleting a billion different things. I hate writer's block. And my issue with writer's block in particular is when I'm working on a story, I write short stories, so I shouldn't have freaking writer's block. So I tend to overplan a little bit, and then I go to write it, and some things happen, but I usually get stuck.
Well, you get in your own way is what it sounds like. You mm-hmm. are juggling too many ideas, and you won't just accept one idea.
I start to second guess myself a lot. And the biggest thing for me is a self-esteem thing. I'm like, am I a good writer still? Because when I was a teenager, I would just do fan fiction. The worlds were already built and I would create characters. And going back and looking back at it is probably the worst thing I could do for myself, because I was this little naive kid just writing things. And my descriptions were lovely, but my characters like were completely out of character.
If anything, the story of The Fifth Element should convince you not to have that, because he wrote the original rough draft when he was a teenager, like 14 or 15.
Oh, God.
And then he came back to it later and turned it into a movie that everybody loves, or most everybody, I guess.
I don't think I could turn any of my Harry Potter
not with that attitude.
I'm just going to say.
Not with that attitude.
I usually find my writer's block is because something is weird. For example, I had the worst writer's block with witches for literally a year. And it was all because I had my launch windows screwed up for Mars. Between Earth and Mars, all the launch windows for my alternate... Because Witches of Flame is about alternate launch history. It's an alternate history between...
It's an alternate history, the timing would still be the same.
Right. And just like Jacqueline Carey, I had to make sure all of my facts are correct. Mm-hmm. And there was something wrong. One of the launches... from Russia, one of the Russian launches was outside of my launch windows, and it was really eating at me, and really eating at me. And because of that, I couldn't think of any good stories. And it was really weird. And then once I went and got everything squared away with all my launch windows, all my stories started flowing again. And it was really strange, because they had nothing to do with one another. Mm-hmm. But it was like, as long as the world wasn't straight, I couldn't write.
Yeah, it's the little minor details.
Yeah.
It's the fly in the ointment, and it just poisons the water until you fix it. But you have to find it first. That's the worst for me. I have to figure out what's going wrong, or I have to figure out what I'm doing wrong. It's usually me taking something outside the box, and I tried it, and I was like, oh, no, this needs to be – it's a different idea. It's for a different story. And then I have the epic problem of going on to do that second story, and I don't come back to the first. I'm just like, wee.
Yeah, I'm over here somewhere.
And it's gone.
Yep.
Well, we still had more questions that were asked to Jacqueline Carey, so we should get right back to that.
Yep. So here are the last questions. So one of the questions that we ask at Geek Tank is, what is the one thing that you geek out about? One of the things that we talk about as geeks is that there's something that everybody geeks out about. My mother was a very big Broncos fan. She loved the Broncos. So we were saying that there's geekage, even if it's not obviously Star Trek or Star Wars, it's out there somewhere. Some people collect little dolls and things like that. Is there something like that that you really geek out about?
Not that I can point to immediately, like, yes, that's the thing.
Right.
I mean, there would be authors I would meet and geek out about. All I can think of right now is my latest obsession, which is the Great British Baking Show.
No, that's
I mean, if I were to walk into a clearing and see the white tent, I would be like, oh my God, you guys, it's the white tent.
We interviewed Terry Farrell, who is Jadzia Dax in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and apparently she geeks out about towels at hotels. She loves the towels in hotels, hotel towels. I don't know why.
Okay.
But that was her
that
thing.
Is really.
Robes.
Robes. Oh, okay. That I totally
towels,
get.
Towels, not towels. Robes. That's right. So I'm glad I have these guys. Robes. But so I mean, it's always something interesting, but it is always interesting. You know, it's. It's a fascinating thing.
So, do you like to bake, or do you just like to watch the show?
I do like to bake, but it's a dangerous proposition when you're trying to avoid carbs. So I kind of only do it around the holidays.
When nobody can avoid carbs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I do love to watch the show. Like, you can literally feel your blood pressure dropping or lowering as you watch it. Uh-huh. And the worst thing that's going to happen is something has a soggy bottom.
Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Really enjoyed it. All right.
Well, and there we go. And that was our interview with Jacqueline Carey. I'd like to thank Jacqueline Carey for sitting with us. That was a really lovely time. It was great talking to her. I just really enjoy spending the time with her, and she was really nice to us, especially since it was Mariah's first time having an interview with her. So Troy is trying to tell me where her Twitter was and was pushing buttons.
That was a question that just came up.
Yes. So let's, if you wish to find her, you can find her on Twitter at jcareyauthor. That's J-C-A-R-E-Y, author, A-U-T-H-O-R. You can also find her at her website at jacquelinecarey.com. And we really would, you could find any of her books at all the major bookstores.
She has a whole listing of her books on her website.
On her website.
It's a good place to go.
You can find it at Wikipedia and stuff like that. But start with Kushiel's Dart. It's a good book. It really is. And it's a good series. Not for kids, not for anybody under, like, say, oh, I don't know, maybe 15 or 16. So I would say, you know, not a kid's series.
Don't tell me how to raise my children.
Right. Except for Troy. It's not for Troy either.
No.
No. But everybody else can read them. So now let's go on ahead and go to our one-minute debate.
All right, and it's time once again for our second one-minute debates. So what's going to happen is person A is going to make a point. Person B is going to argue against that point. Person A is going to re-argue. And then person B is going to re-argue.
Lots of arguing.
Lots of arguing.
Well, lots of re's.
But they only get 1 minute each time. So this time, we're going to start with Star Wars versus Star Trek, the legendary battle between
the
geeks.
Legendary.
And I'd like to point out that I'm taking the side of Star Wars because Guy is a diehard Trekkie.
Right.
Not because I'm necessarily against Star Trek.
Right, or that I'm against Star Wars.
Exactly. Yeah. It's really somebody's got to argue a side, and this makes the best sense, and they're both awesome.
And just because you prefer Star Wars over Star Trek, and I prefer Star Trek over Star Wars, but we still love both franchises
exactly.
A lot.
So I'm ready when you want to start the buzzer.
All right, and we are starting the timer
with Troy.
Now.
And Star Wars is better than Star Trek in many ways, and the way that I'm going to point out first is that it's more easily taken in. You can stick with just A New Hope through Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, and you have a nice story right there, and it's a beginning, middle, and end, and everybody's happy. Whereas I wouldn't know where to tell somebody to start with Star Trek because it is massively everywhere, and there's so many pieces of it. It would take you quite a long time to watch every single episode and consume it. It's like having a really decent meal versus going into a buffet that spans 30 restaurants long. So that was first point, is it's more easily consumed. Second point, and this is a preference thing, the music in Star Wars, I think, is far better than the music in Star Trek, with the exception possibly of Wrath of Khan. And I will grant it that. But other than Wrath of Khan, and I think the same guy also, the same musician, composer also did Search for Spock.
Right.
But other than that, I think the Star Wars music and all the different ones of the Star Wars films are better.
Okay.
All right, shots fired. Guy, are you ready?
I am.
All right. And go.
I think Star Trek is better than Star Wars because it makes you think. It's a deeper and richer environment with a lot more social commentary, with a much deeper and richer environment of thinking to make you pay attention to our universe and our culture around us and what we're doing to each other as people. But more importantly, I also think that it makes the people, the fandom that comes from Star Trek seems to be more hopeful and they think more positively about the world. So I think that's a richer thing, and I think that's just because of the environment that Star Trek engenders. The music, however, I probably have to agree with you. John Williams is the man.
All right. Han shot first, but Greedo shot back. So here we go again with Star Wars.
All right. I will start out countering with of course, there's hope in Star Wars because the first one's A New Hope. And that it's a clear black and white, good versus evil, showing that. And then you get the in-between black and white gray areas with Han Solo, and they even reflect that in the clothing with Han wearing black and white and Luke wearing white and Darth Vader wearing black. So I'm going to actually pull in outside resources here to help me with my argument. And if you go to Rotten Tomatoes, the worst Star Wars film ever made, it's a Rotten Tomato meter marking of 55%, whereas the worst Star Trek film ever made, which is listed as Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, gets a 22% rating. So the public says it's the worst. And I'm going to wrap it up by saying Star Wars is a space opera versus Star Trek, which is a soap opera. And I'm going to just sit back and let my 10 seconds wind out with me saying, may the Force be with you.
Oh, snap. All right. So, Guy, your phaser was set to stun. Is it set to kill? It's your turn. Ready, set, go.
So, first of all, I would like to say that you brought in more arguments and didn't rebut my entire argument. But I will rebut your argument by saying the response to your comment that it's easier to digest is true, that Star Wars is easier to digest, but that also means that it's also shallower. And I feel like because of that, there's not a lot to its story. There's not a lot to its, even though it's got a very, very interesting culture to it, all of its culture seems to be coming in from its expanded universe. And I feel like, though, that's a very rich and deep expanded universe. Star Wars or Star Trek has a lot more of its expanded universe in the show itself. There's 725 episodes and a lot of movies of that universe that's there. So, I don't know. I mean, it's one or the other, but that's so it may be a buffet, but it's a heck of a buffet.
All right. So that was our 1 minute debate. Who do you think won? Was it Troy or was it Guy? You can let us know. You can email us at
questions@RockyMountainGeekTank.com.
You can also find us on Facebook.
Just search for Rocky Mountain Geek Tank and you can find our page and subscribe to it.
We also are on Twitter at @RMGeekTank, and then we're also on Instagram and Tumblr now at Rocky Mountain Geek Tank.
I would also like to follow up this by saying this argument is interesting because it's kind of like comparing combat boots to tomatoes.
Yeah, it
Star
really
Trek
was.
And Star Wars are, although they're both science fiction, they are so far different. And
it was really fun, though.
It was fun to try. It's.
But everybody always makes this like the key debate in all of geekery, right?
And it's always puzzled Guy and myself because we never really argue about it, so we thought it'd be funny to actually argue about it.
And we were kind of off kilter for it.
That's okay.
But let us know what you think,
and we'll talk about it. And that's all the time we have for today. I've been Guy.
I've been Troy.
And I've been Chelsea.
And this is Geek Tank 302.
As always, you can email us at questions@RockyMountainGeekTank.com. Join the conversation on Twitter at @RMGeekTank. You can also follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Tumblr. We're Rocky Mountain Geek Tank. Feel free to join the conversation. We look forward to hearing from you.
Geek Tank is a production of Fox Blade Media and is protected under the Creative Commons 3.0 license.
Your hosts today were Guy S. Davis, C. Troy Floor, and Chelsea Kramer.
Kevin Weibler is our engineer, and our music was composed by David Coyle. Geek Tank is funded by listeners like you. Please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/Foxblade. I'm Mike Davis, and Toto, I don't think we are in Kansas anymore. Good night.